Technology has made the world a smaller place, but there is still so much we do not know. Every week, Postcards takes you on a trip of exploration and discovery. From a small village in Afghanistan to a protected cultural heritage site in South America. From Africa's amazing natural landscapes to the most advanced tech displays in the world, Postcards. Where you meet the world without actually taking a trip. Postcards.
Hello and welcome to Postcards, a show which takes you across borders without actually leaving home. I'm Wen Jie. New watermark viewing technology is helping scientists in Berlin work out where and when pieces of music and art were created. An infrared camera creates an accurate image that can also help determine the authenticity of certain works. Here's Nick Lanigan with this postcard from Germany.
It's an original page of sheet music written by Austrian composer Franz Schubert before his death from typhoid fever in 1828. And now, almost two centuries later, it's being examined using a groundbreaking new method developed by German scientists. They're searching for the watermark, a small image or pattern that all old pieces of paper have somewhere. Normally, researchers would use light to find the watermark in the paper, but the mark is often obscured by ink, such as on the handwritten musical scores of Schubert. This technology uses infrared or thermal technology to take an image of the watermark, which isn't obscured by ink or miscolorings. The paper is placed between a warm plate and the camera. Then it is filmed with the infrared camera. Since the watermark will have caused the paper to thin, there will be a difference in temperature in that area, something the camera can detect. Hagen Immel is a research assistant at the Berlin State Library.
When I put the paper, the music sheet, on the warm plate, at that moment I can see the watermark. It is transmitted to the computer and recorded, and in a short sequence of a few seconds, I can see the moment when the watermark is at its clearest, with the most contrasts and without seeing the ink.
All important European paper manufacturers added a watermark to their products, right up until the start of the 20th century. Paper was an important and expensive product, and adding a watermark was a way for the paper mills to stamp their product, like adding a logo. The watermark images that the camera detects are stored in a database, meaning that documents can be cross-referenced and their date and location can be ascertained. Martina Rebmann is head of the music department at the Berlin State Library.
Die Wasserzeichen sind ganz besonders wichtig zur Erforschung von Handschriften bezüglich des Alters.
The watermarks are very important when we research handwritten papers, especially to determine the age of the document and the location where it was written. With a watermark, we can find out where a document was written, and also the date. But it is important that the picture of the watermark is clear. With this technology, with the infrared camera, we get such a good picture that all other methods are inferior. It is really the latest standard for this technology that we use here.
The technology was developed jointly by scientists at the Fraunhofer Institute for Wood Research in Braunschweig and at the University of Braunschweig. Two systems have been delivered so far, one to the Berlin State Library and one to the Bayern State Library. Volker Megner, scientist at the Department of Communication Technologies at the University of Braunschweig, is one of the inventors of the system. He explains how the infrared technology gives a far clearer picture of the watermarks than a normal light camera.
Wirklich das Besondere ist, dass man die Wasserzeichen, also im Prinzip.
What is special is that you can see the different thickness of the paper and therefore get a visual picture of the watermark. That is really the outcome.
The camera could also be used to find the watermark in artworks, such as those at the Museum of Prints and Drawings in Berlin. But it's certainly not cheap. The system used in the Berlin State Library costs more than 100,000 euros, which is some US$113,000, a significant sum even for a large library like the one in Berlin. So the next step is to make it cheaper and more available to small and medium-sized institutions worldwide. Scientists are currently trying to use cheaper infrared cameras and compensate for the lower quality picture with improved software. The Berlin State Library has around 68,000 sheets of music in its possession, most of them undated and not researched. The research work with the infrared camera is likely to continue for years to come and is bound to uncover many more secrets of the music and its creators.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. Hikers are exploring a new 40-day-long trail in Jordan, where it connects the kingdom's green northern mountains with red and black deserts, crusader castles, Byzantine forts, and sleepy hamlets. For many, the destination of choice is the ancient site of Petra. Here's Michael Butterworth with this postcard from Jordan.
Mist shrouds colossal rock formations rising from the arid plains of southern Jordan. Ruins of civilizations lie at the side of an ancient trade route being revived by outdoor enthusiasts, linking the kingdom's green northern mountains with some of the region's most spectacular historic sites and natural formations. The Jordan Trail winds across the plains and up steep mountains to connect two Nabataean sites using routes established more than 2,000 years ago. The Jordan Trail Association says the path winds through Jordan's open-air museum and can help build environmental and cross-culture awareness through slow tourism, where hikers and tourists spend time getting to know local communities. A group of French hikers recently engaged the services of a guide to walk some 14 kilometers of the trail from Little Petra to Petra, which took them around 4 hours. One member of that group, Sarah Rufanak, is enthused by the trail's natural beauty and rich cultural heritage.
Trail is about colors, about lines in the rocks, amazing colors that changes with the light of the day. So it's different at noon, it's different in the morning, it's different in the evening. It's yellow, it's red, it's white. So I think this entire trail that I did today is about light and about beautiful colors. What I really like when I walk on this trail is to try and imagine how people were living here 2,000 years ago or even 10,000 years ago.
Guide Mahmoud Badoul grew up around the trail and knows all of its nooks and crannies, history, and place names like the back of his hand. He hopes the Jordan Trail will bring a new kind of tourism to the area around Petra, one that has people appreciating the local environment and culture.
A lot of people are really elated about this trail. Many are asking about it, this unique direction, the rear entrance to Petra. I'm expecting that in the future, there will be an increase in hikers on this trail, because generally speaking, people are out hiking in many places, and we hope to see them coming here to hike this trail.
Up in the northernmost section of the trail near the borders with Syria and Israel, Reem Al-Kilani, a Jordanian national, was blown away by the verdant hills in her own country.
Honestly, I was a bit surprised to see the amount of grain here. You know, I haven't been hiking for a year. The best thing here is to look at all the colors. Yellow, red, purple, like in one section where you must take care because on the ground there's like a fertile forest of yellow flowers.
Back in the mountain plains of southern Jordan on the section of the Jordan Trail connecting Little Petra to the famous monastery at Petra, Amjad Shahrour continues hiking. He has walked almost the entire length of the Jordan Trail as the trail manager and cartographer. Walking past the Nabataean ruins, He remarks that much of the trail follows ancient routes carved by long-gone civilizations, like the Byzantines, Nabataeans, Romans, and tribal confederations. Founded in the 2nd century BC by the Nabataeans, an ancient civilization of desert nomads turned urbanites, Petra was, for nearly five centuries, a highly developed agriculture-based society, and the crossroads of the silk and spice trade in Asia, Egypt, Greece, and Rome. Its importance waned after a devastating earthquake in 363 AD. By 700 AD, it had all but vanished until it was rediscovered by a Swiss explorer in 1812. Petra's unique desert ruins, buildings and tombs carved directly into red sandstone cliffs, became a major tourist site only in the last 50 years.
The Jordan Trail is a long-distance hiking trail crossing and connecting the country of Jordan from north to south. The Jordan Trail is 600 kilometers long, starting in Qais and ending in Aqaba at the Red Sea. Usually it's done within an average of 40 days of walking, following new trails and ancient trails like the one we're doing now in Petra.
He is one of a group of outdoor tourists who mapped the trail over the past 3 years.
The Jordan Trail is special because of its geographic diversity. When you start in the north, it's a green and fertile region of forests. But afterwards, you descend into the canyon lands with more water. And then you get to the south, closer to the desert, all the time passing local villages along ancient trade routes that were in use for thousands of years.
With small private donations and volunteers, the Jordan Trail Association mapped the trail, built relationships with local communities, and uploaded GPS coordinates, enabling anyone to take the path at any time. The 600-kilometer north-to-south route goes across the country, from Qais to Aqaba. The trail is not physically marked and includes harsh terrain and areas where water is scarce. The trail can be hiked using GPS coordinates, but tour operators, group hikes, and local guides are also available.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. Secret recipes are no longer the mainstay of a great cuisine in Buenos Aires. Cooking Without Borders is a project that's bringing Latin American chefs together to share techniques and recipes. Here's Spencer Music with this postcard from Argentina.
In the busy kitchen of El Baguanillo restaurant in Buenos Aires, two chefs join hands to create a gastronomic experience. Brazilian cook Andre Mifano and his Argentine peer Fernando Riviola are putting together fermented vegetables and fresh leaves on a freshly picked trunk. This original plate is part of a 10-dish fusion menu they're preparing for 40 hungry foodies. It's all part of a unique project called Cooking Without Borders. It was born in Argentina's capital in 2013. Almost every month, Fernando and his partner Gabi Lafuente invite famed Latin American chefs to open their kitchen or travel to meet them. They get together to exchange cooking techniques, native products, and ancient recipes. This time, Mifano and Riviola are fusing Mifano's signature Italian cuisine and Argentina's meat-obsessed dishes. The Brazilian chef brought 50 kilograms of food from his homeland to prepare an organic meal. On tonight's menu, tomato tamponade with pork rinds, white cabbage and apple with wild boar ham, and poached oysters on a sour beet and spinach sauce. To the beat of American rock music and South American folklore rhythm, the team has concocted the key ingredient, a friendly atmosphere.
I think the importance of this is actually not only bring cooks and coaches together, but minds and souls, and put this to something bigger than only one dinner. make this something that would make people think about it.
By cooking crackling fish that Riviola fished himself, the culinary pair are also promoting organic and sustainable gastronomy. From a humble kitchen, Mafano and Riviola are advocating 100% Latin America-based flavors and ingredients. They also want to revalue small producers' work. For example, the El Baquino restaurant specializes in meat from the region. By adding an Argentine and Brazilian touch to the dinner, the chefs see Latin America as one cultural entity.
We look for matches. We consider that all the limits are geopolitical and have nothing to do with food or food culture or what we think of what gastronomy is, or products, or absolutely nothing. So we started looking first for similarities between products, and there are a lot. The most basic ones are potato across the Andean plateau. The Mesopotamian region has a lot of fruits that we share with Uruguay, Paraguay, and Brazil.
The Cooking Without Borders project is bearing fruit. Riviola and La Fuente have turned the second floor of the El Baquino restaurant into a photography studio. It features images of 40 well-known chef's secrets in a soon-to-be-published book. It's Mifano's turn to present his chef d'oeuvre, a chocolate and smoked bacon cake dressed up with tonka bean sauce.
Antiguamente, los cocineros eran celosos de sus recetas, de sus platos, no querían que se viera nada.
Cooks used to be possessive of their recipes, their dishes. They didn't want to show anything. We want the contrary. We want to open our kitchen, our house. We want people to come to Buenos Aires to get to know not only our gastronomy, but also connect with other colleagues.
En realidad el proyecto no tiene un fin comercial, no.
In reality, the project doesn't have a commercial end. We didn't do it for money. In fact, it doesn't bring in any money. This is a project that is only based on the moments we enjoy.
Tonight, the guests at El Baquino are testing a newcomer on the Buenos Aires food scene. The Cooking Without Borders initiative puts traditional products at the center stage of the culinary experience. Commenting on the project, food critic Maria Del Machiles says Latin America is now more than a commodity producer.
Hace aproximadamente una década, Latinoamérica dejó de mirar Europa.
It has been about a decade that Latin America stopped looking at Europe primarily and started to look inward. This represents a very important change in our cuisine. Clearly, looking inward means looking at our traditions, our land, what our land gives us.
Although Argentine cuisine isn't spicy, the kitchen of El Baquino abounds with regional spices to blend Latin American cuisines together. As the dinner comes to an end, Riviola and La Fuente have a lot on their plate. They're heading to Mexico and then on to Brazil to share knives and kitchens with other regional chefs.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. Bamboo is being used by an innovative Ghanaian bicycle maker to produce unique natural-like frames. This Boomers project is also promoting a social scheme that trains local youths in the nearby township. Here's Nick Lanigan with this postcard from Ghana.
Not alloy, steel, carbon fiber, or titanium, these bike frames are made from bamboo by Ghanaian manufacturer Boomers International. Here on the bamboo plantation, the main raw material required by Boomers is being harvested. The fast-growing wood has been used for centuries because it's prized for its strength and flexibility. Boomers aims to make bamboo a major global resource and to itself become the world's leader in the bamboo manufacturing industry. In 2009, Boomers partnered Craig Calfee's bamboo bikes company Bambusero to train rural youths in bamboo bike manufacturing. The bikes were originally branded as Calfee, but an upsurge in demand meant the brand could start putting its own stamp on the frame, resulting in the creation of Boomers International in 2014. Kwabena Danso is the CEO of Boomers International.
In the late 1990s, a man called Craig Coffey came up again with the idea of building bicycles from bamboo. And so he kind of reinvented the whole idea, and then we got on board. So we had a partnership with Craig, who came to Ghana to train us and then give us all the technical abilities and skills that we need.
Currently, Boomers has 20 workers here in its bamboo bicycle factory. Inside the workshop, the workers are all using their own hands. There are no robots on this production line. The bamboo is shaped, cut, drilled, and then sanded.
Well, basically, building a bamboo bike can take you about 40 hours to build. Like, to build a single frame, that's if you are working on one.
After the frame is assembled, it is sprayed with a fine lacquer for a beautiful gloss finish that shows off the natural material at its best.
Currently, we export to 6 countries. That is Germany, Holland, Australia, Poland, Canada, and Taiwan. And we are entering the UK market very soon, as well as the Finnish market and then the US market.
All these bikes have been tested in Germany to tight European safety standards, and they've also passed the relevant international testing regulations.
We make the city bike, the mountain bike, and the road bike. And now we've also come up with the case bikes. So we have 2 different types of the case bike. We have the tricycle, and then we also have the balance bikes, which is like the push bikes. And we've also just developed the 20-wheel bikes for children between 8 and 14. So we are coming up with different products.
Boomers has been an affiliate of the Yonso project since 2008 and has been supporting human development through financing, education, employment and library programs. Yonso is a non-governmental organization that works to improve rural lives by organizing development-oriented programs. Since its inception in 2007, it supported 200 children with educational opportunities, trained 15 youths in bamboo technologies, and 400 women with business training and financing. Amo Charles is a foreman at Boomers International. He left school without the financial means to continue his education. Boomers was his first job. With the money he's saved from working here, he is planning to get back to school and continue his education.
You work here for 6 months before you've been promoted to work as a full worker here. So after that, I've gone through all these things, and now I have gained more experience.
The project became a small-scale producer of bamboo bikes in 2010, and it also embarked on a reading project that's going to help more than 10,000 children in rural communities to learn to read. Bayin Sampson is a local teacher and explains what a positive influence Boomers has had in the community.
Since Bamboo Project came into being, it has helped the youth in the community. It has created employment for the youth.
These local apprentices from the township are enjoying their role at Boomers, particularly when they're messing around on their bamboo bikes after work.
With that, we wrap up today's postcards. Your comments, suggestions, or questions are always appreciated, and you can contact us via email at postcards@cri.com.cn. For program producer Zhao Jianfu, I'm Wen Jie. See you next week.